Welcome back to the R-Rated Podcast. The R-Rated Podcast. This week's guest is... Welcome back to the R-Rated Podcast. Today's new guest is Sean Sikowski. I hope I said that okay and did not butcher it too much. Welcome, first of all. How are you doing today?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you. He is an actor, a writer, and a comedic, right?
As well as a producer, currently.
And a producer. Okay, so a man of many talents. Let's ask you where you're from.
Chicago and its western suburbs.
Oh, okay. So how did you end up in LA?
I ended up coming back here. After high school, I served in the Marine Corps. Oh. I really liked California. Yeah. Went back to college at DePaul University, where I actually met the writer of our film. Mm. And then ended up going into advertising in New York. And then eventually just worked my way back here because I always kind of just preferred the vibe. New York's they got the energy. I'm like, you just need a nap, guys. Right. You know, because like, I'm just like, that's why you're all angry. But, you know, and I was just like, I can't do, I kind of knew when I got out there, it'd be like no more than 3 years. It just, I love it. Right. I love living in Astoria, Queens, but I was just like, I need the West Coast. I need warm weather year round. You know, and don't get me wrong, there's no city more beautiful in my opinion than Chicago, but LA is my other home. So it's really great.
And you said you're from, like, you're Polish, right?
I'm Irish, German, Polish, and Bohemian by ethnicity. My great grandma was a Bohemian gypsy that immigrated to France. Whoa. So I'm also French as well.
Do you speak other languages? Like,
embarrassingly, no.
I was like, speak German right now.
I wish. I'm doing all the Duolingo stuff. I'm actually learning some.
Shout out Duolingo.
Yeah. I'm learning French, Spanish, nice. and Greek presently. So yeah,
Greek's like really hard to learn. I'm planning to go to Greece in September, and I was like, oh, like maybe I could like Duolingo some, and I'm like, I don't know how to read their alphabet or anything. I'm like, I don't know what it says.
It's a tough language. I actually just last year did like a 3-day trip in Santorini because I was studying abroad.
Amazing.
in Europe, and I had a 2-day layover, and it was $100 for like the whole time I was there. So I was like, well, I don't know if I'll ever be able to afford this again. And
right. It's like, take the opportunity.
Well, it was always a dream. I grew up loving ancient Greek and Roman history and mythology. And I'm like, I got to jump into the Aegean at some point in my life and like essentially quote unquote baptize myself there.
Wow. Okay. So how did the whole like becoming a actor, a writer, a producer, how did that all come to be? Because you said you were in Chicago. So did you already know you wanted to do something in the film industry when you were in Chicago? Did that come later with like moving to LA?
I think it's kind of both a long and short form story where like I've always been different from a young age. Mm-hmm. I always kind of stood out. Mm-hmm. A lot of times I thought that was a bad thing because I was always trying to fit in.
Never.
And yet, as I'm getting older, I accept the fact that the things I stand out for people actually like.
Right.
Versus everything that you would try to hide about yourself. Yeah. Some of it's being a shorter man. I have had some interesting comments, especially before, you know, I met my partner.
Yeah.
And we joke because that one I'm going to save because I don't need the memes. But there are memes related to people my height. But there were some comments made before I met her, which was always hilarious because I wasn't catfishing them. But apparently they thought I was going to be taller than what I said I was.
That's just mean. People are mean.
You know, it's okay. It's just something you get used to. I've never really been concerned about it. Yeah. It's more like that's their issue.
Exactly.
You know, it's like I can't change this, and I have to love who I am.
Exactly.
But
and you shouldn't have to change. That's not like an issue at all.
No, and I don't get me wrong. I think from my standpoint, like I'm over it. Like as old as I am, like I've dealt with it long enough, and I'm just like whatever.
Yeah.
But as far as the acting went, from a young age, like it wasn't really present available. Like initially, like I had elementary school plays and things like that. But my teachers were always pushing me into the arts. I used to draw a lot, something I'm hoping to get back into at some point.
You mean like storyboard? Like you can do some really nice storyboards.
I think I want to end up at some point like trying to get into like an anime school. So hoping.
Yeah, you're like next level. Let's go.
I haven't touched a pencil or anything in years. So it'll be like a long process, but I figure why not?
Exactly. Why not?
So I did that sort of stuff, but I was always... I'm always very connected with my emotions. Mm-hmm. And so they were always pushing me to act, and it just eventually wasn't available where I was living.
Okay.
And so that just sort of went to the side and athletics. My mother was a cross country runner in college.
Oh,
My
okay. So
father,
everyone's fit. The family's
my,
fit.
you know, my family stays in good shape.
I love
Yeah.
that.
And my father was a three sport all city athlete in Chicago. Back when I think that was a little bit more emphatic than like say all state and all that. And so
Big.
that sort of took hold, and I got
Yeah.
into wrestling, had a
Oh.
very successful high school career
Yeah.
in that.
But in
And
high school, you're not taking like drama class or like more like elementary, but not really high school.
just because of the conflict of sports, and I kind of struggled with learning during high school, and
Yeah.
also I never fit in, so like I was also trying to figure out how to do both.
I get that. And in high
And
school, it's overwhelming.
I never felt myself being dumb. I always kind of knew it was people weren't teaching me the right
Yeah,
way. And
yeah.
I think it's
I
because,
think that's, yeah, we're not dumb. It's,
and I'm really hoping with all these advances in
yeah.
AI and augmented reality
Yeah.
that we can put that on emphasis on learning the way, particularly Europe and the Asiatic countries are doing. I think, you know, because if there's one thing we should do is really make a focus on education, it's so important.
Yeah.
With that respect, I always, like I said, was in touch with my emotions. So, and to escape from significant bullying, I would jump into movies, books, video games, any form of art, and it just there was a visceral reaction. So I kind of always knew maybe it was there, and I never really ever thought about it until I came back out to California, and some like coworkers of mine. Kind of, you know, I had just got done being homeless,
Oh my God.
and while maintaining a 9 to 5. So
Wow.
I try to pat myself on the back because I
Yeah.
that even that in itself is such a struggle. And
Yeah.
I will shout out SoCal Bulldog Rescue, who helped take in my my bulldog
Oh.
while I was living under the overpass in Sepulveda Boulevard for 4 months, so that I could secure housing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, and now also Real Time Rescue. They help LA's homeless community and their pets find housing.
Wow. Wow,
So
that's amazing.
those are two organizations I
Yeah.
always try to champion.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that.
I just think it's such a cause. I don't think it's getting ignored by people, but I do think the people are
Yeah.
kind of being disempowered
Yeah.
from being able to help.
So, okay, so when you were homeless, did this ever take away the spark or the passion for you to like want to pursue the arts?
I don't think even at the time I was like it wasn't like I wouldn't want to do it. It was
Yeah.
just, you know,
It's just hard.
I didn't come from like a super wealthy family or
Yeah,
anything. So
yeah.
like it was when I went after the Marine Corps, I was like, you got to get a degree that's
Right.
focused on a job, on a, and you know, people don't really view the arts as a job.
I know. They're my parents were like, "Why are you doing that?"
But my parents also knew I was very artistically inclined, and you know, my mother and father pushed me in certain ways to
Yeah,
pursue it.
yeah.
But you know, with that stigma around the bowling, everything, it was like kind of hard to dive in because then these are the kids getting picked on. It's like I already got enough people coming at me,
Yeah.
and it's
Yeah.
just and going through all that. But then I got at my job where I was at, and a couple of friends of mine that I made there were like, you really seem like an artist. Go to this school.
Yeah.
I auditioned, got in, won a couple of awards,
Amazing. Okay.
and then my mentor Sam Miller,
Yeah.
who he's in London. That's where he lives. That's where he's from. Because the branch it's a school that started in London, and
Yeah.
they opened up a branch in L.A. And I met him during the pandemic, and he was like, you need, and he's like a big brother to me at this point. Coaches a lot of actors, you know, over there, and works with Green Shoes Arts, which helps underprivileged communities
Wow.
in London, with an emphasis on the arts. And he was like, no, you're good, Sean. You need to go get paid. Like,
Yeah.
you know, and
Yeah.
for me, I was tired of doing advertising.
Right.
You know, I had reported to CEOs. I had been a department head. I had been, you know, and it was just like, I didn't like it. It didn't make me
Yeah.
feel good. It made
Yeah.
me feel icky. And I just this I eventually set this plan in motion to say, okay, if this much I can leave, pursue it for at least like a gap year in a way. And it sort of turned out into something more in that process because at the time I was actually a bodybuilder, and then I was during the
I'm
pandemic.
like, you've done it
Well, during the pandemic, I kind of got disenchanted from that. I didn't like how the industry was treating certain
all.
things,
Right.
you know, and I, you know, and I also felt I was getting a lot of pressure from young boys, you know, who would come to me and like in the gym and ask
Oh.
me, and they were having body image issues, and
Yeah.
I just felt an obligation to not like give advice towards doing it, because someone like myself who, you know, was bullied for his height had those issues and was like, well, I can't go up. So at least, you know, like I grew up with Arnold and all these action heroes.
Did you watch the documentary?
We were just starting to watch it last night.
It's so good. You should finish it. I was so inspired. Like I was feeling down and like, because of this whole writer's strike too, I was like, there's no work. Like, I feel so like out of place right now. And like, I felt like things were like finally going well. And then I'm like, oh, no work. So I just felt so like stuck, like I hit a wall. And I watched the Arnold documentary and I just felt like super inspired because he did stuff that people don't even do in one lifetime. Like he literally had like three major jobs, like major occupations, and like made it work and is still doing it. Like nothing's stopping it. He's like so disciplined. I was like, wow. I need that. I need to be disciplined.
Yeah, I think that's that. I mean, that's clearly what separated him. And also, he's you know, a very brilliant mind. I think sometimes the brilliance in his is he doesn't overcomplicate it. It's very simple. Solutions are always generally the best way to go. And I think especially now when we have 9 million computers.
Yeah, literally
everywhere. It's just everything that's overcomplicated.
Yes.
But yeah, I grew up with action stars like him, you know, in the middle of their prime of their, you know, careers.
Right.
And, you know, like I said, ancient Greek and Roman history mythology, I was always wanting to be somewhat in ways ideal. And, you know, just had body dysmorphia and it just, I'm watching the fit tees and waist trainers and no offense to anybody who wants to take my, I didn't like the idea of these companies that might talk to me, and promote these things because it was essentially beauty under the guise of health. And I just didn't like that. I didn't like when, you know, these young men would approach me. Not that, you know, I don't empathize, but it was just, I you know, and I'd have to find ways to say like, look, this is an industry filled with broken people. You're okay. You're a kid. Like, you know, go have a slice of pizza. You know, some things are going to form up just because you're growing up. Like, don't worry. Be yourself. You know, of course, maintain a level of fitness just for your own well-being. But, you know, don't look at me and think that like this is I have everything like that. Even at the times I was doing, I'm like, it's not all good in here right now. So
That's huge for you to be able to say that too, because I feel like women always talk about like their body dysmorphia and like, you know, comparing themselves to other women and like who they see like on poster or like billboards and like magazines and online. But like I've never heard a man talk about like the same thing, like dealing with body dysmorphia. And I'm like, wow, like no one ever really talks about that. Like, it's so true though. Like as a young boy, like you're comparing yourself too. And like when you live in LA, like in the entertainment industry too, and you're trying to get into that, like you do think like, I have to like look the certain like way and be this like height and all this. And
so,
it's refreshing to hear from you too. Cause I'm like, wow, like we're all the same. Like it's like reassuring that like, okay, like we all have these thoughts and insecurities sometimes, but that's not bad. Like, and that doesn't mean that like, we're not as attractive or on the same path as these other people. It's just like, we're not all fit to like look the same and be the same. That like, we're not robots.
Absolutely. And that's even something I still love the art form when, especially from its original days with Arnold and all that. I thought there was a beauty in it that I don't agree with it now.
Right.
You know, and at the same time, like even at some of the different classes and it's like, can any of you swim? Can any of you run? you know, that sort of feeling. And it's just, you know, I'm very fortunate. I also have very good genetics and you know, like my, you know, my partner gets upset at me at times because there'll be times I'll just take 5 days off and I'll lose weight like it's nothing else and I'll eat what I want. And that's the thing is I eat really healthy, but you know, she gets a little jealous of that. And, you know, but she, you know, she's absolutely, you know, as far as beauty, not only exteriorly, if I want to be a judge in that category, it's definitely a reflection of who she is as a person.
Yeah.
She is absolutely the best person I've ever met. You know, and I always joke with my roommate, who's my oldest friend, is what could you not like about her? Like that she's a good person? Like, it's just like we look
we
at each other.
People.
Yeah, you know, and we just look at each other like, comparatively, neither one of us are good compared to her, you know? So I think, you know, I'm very lucky to have that kind of person in my life who fills my life with love, and decided that, you know, as that leads into when I got disenchanted with bodybuilding was, you know, it was actually at the time I started falling in love with, as I'd been acting long enough, and there was just this thing that I was finding happiness and unbridled happiness that I moved forward with. And I just realized this is what I want. I'm happy with how I look. And that's something I've become more comfortable with. I have my days, of course, but
Yeah,
I
we
moved
all
into
do.
that. I took the gap year, and that led me to where I'm at, where I'm producing a feature film.
Amazing. Okay, what's the feature film about?
Well, the film is called By the Grape of God. It's
Okay.
written by Kevin Hickey, who
Okay.
I met at DePaul University
Very
when
cool.
we were in business school.
Very cool.
Neither one of us at the time knew we were artists. For some odd reason, I don't know what allowed him and other students to gravitate me towards me. I think it was just the fact that I had done the Marine Corps. So like for them, it's at his age, and it's like they go straight from high school to college, so it
Right.
feels like that's it. And I'm not saying that was his mentality, but generally students feel that way. And for me, I'm like, it's not that big of a deal. And don't get me wrong, I was a good student, but like I'd make probably a lot of jokes I should not have been making at the time and all those things. But somehow he gravitated towards me, a friendship started, and when we reconnected when I moved back out here, I just ended up having like a 4-month lull where, and it was, I think, due to COVID at the time, there was nothing coming my way all of a sudden. And I was like, Kevin, I gotta do something. I'm an actor that's proactive. And I'm like, let me see your scripts. Over deep dish pizza, of course, guys.
Always. Great things happen over a deep dish pizza,
Absolutely. And it's the good one, guys. You can get off that New York stuff. Don't get me wrong, it's pizza, it's all good. So that being said, I'm like, I say, send me your script. And he sends me it, and he's like, but like the last third isn't that great. I'm like, I'm really good at script analysis. Let me be the judge. Artists always shit on
Yeah,
themselves.
exactly. We're always like, no, don't.
And sure enough, I read it 3 pages and I have to text him. And I hope there's not any issues with too much swearing. I'm like,
No, so the R-rated podcast, please swear.
well, I never know that like Spotify rules.
No, you're good. You're good. It's under explicit, so if we
lovely.
need to say.
So I just text him 3 pages in, you motherfucker,
Yeah, you motherfucker.
because I had never through that quickly, other than maybe when I was reading Harry Potter.
Oh, I'm playing the new Hogwarts game, by the way. I'm obsessed.
Yeah, I gotta buy that for my partner because
If
she didn't.
you don't want to leave the house and just be like, it's
I
gonna happen. Like,
don't leave the house because of this film presently, so
okay, so add it to it. Add
it'll
to it
definitely
then.
be something to pick up once we're done with the film. I had never felt something so visceral in its story, and then I was just like, I get to the last quarter of it. I'm like, okay, that's where it's not fleshed out. It was solid. Kevin's way too hard on himself. It's this Kevin's like if you put Martin McDonagh, Richard Linklater, and Mike Judge into
It mixed
one,
it together.
and then whatever that little special flavor of Kevin upbringing in his life has
Nice.
done, because it's such a warm and personable story like that anyone can really relate to. But I tech and I just give him a couple ideas, and I should say I gave him a ton of ideas, because as an actor I just like, all right, put myself in each one of these characters to help flesh out that part. He took maybe a couple, maybe. I'm not taking any credit for that. Kevin is phenomenal, and I can't do that to him. And everyone's a great idea fairy, really. But he executed and made this beautiful story to where 10 iterations later we were fortunate enough to get, thanks to our application, one shot, one kill. We got, which is so rare to do apparently, we got fiscal sponsorship from Film Independent.
Nice. Okay, cool.
And prior to that, but I knew it was great prior to that, and it got validated right prior to that. The company Slated, which analyzed scripts and helped get funded, like for recent ones, Sound
Wow.
of Metal and Peanut Butter
Ooh.
Falcon,
Ooh.
and we were like pretty much on par with them. So it was just like, so basically, what they helped do is like incubate. So basically, they said somebody should really consider buying this. We're looking forward to seeing what we do when we bring it to market.
How much do people like when you like a feature script like and you possibly want to sell it, like how much can you ask for? Or like what's like the starting base, you know?
It really depends on what you're trying to do and kind of the systems you have around and how you're trying to leverage that. So like some people might have a very solid script, right? And they're self-funding it, and maybe they only need X amount of dollars, and then you just evaluate. Or some people have a really good script in capacities, and or it's an okay script, but you have someone, a name brand talent that might be interested in featuring that, so that can leverage it. So it really all depends on how you go about it,
Got it.
and what your strategy is. And for us, it's like we have a really good script. We need established talent, which will be soon to be announcing some of our leads.
Cool. Very cool.
Obviously, the other thing that was about this script, and maybe this is an early announcement, is one of the things I told Kevin was that one of the leads was, I'm like, you know who this is, right? And he looked at me and he was like, oh shit, it's you. And I was just like,
Lost
yeah.
on my
And I
life.
said, look, I'm not going to twist your arm on this, but I've never wanted a character more. I
Oh,
gave
I
him a
love
couple.
that.
I gave him. I'm like, look, just let me know. I'll help you push this through. I'll if I have to take a supporting character or anything like that. And let me be quite clear. I hate using it as supporting because this is almost in its ways an ensemble piece. Very, very like I don't know if it qualifies as definition, like in say like Knives Out or something like that, where it's so heavily ensemble. But it is all the supporting characters are so critical to making this work, and I think that goes with all films, because when they say, oh, I'm just an extra, or I'm just a support, or I'm just a supporting, I'm like, no, you
No, it's not
without
just a
that,
support. I'm like, come on. Like, this movie, this show wouldn't be a thing without you. Like, we need all the characters. Like,
and
they're all important.
I think one director who really acknowledges that, if you ever look at the credits for a lot of them, like Kill Bill or something like that, up until it just becomes chaotic, he names the extras Tarantino. So it's like that's so like, and for me, I think
As they
that's
should. You should get the credit if you're in the film. Like, honestly, that's like something that really bothers me about this like newer stuff. Like, you work on stuff and like there's such a big crew behind it, like 150 people most of the time, if not more. And then you just see like the first like 10 credits, and it's like the director, the producer, and then like the main actors. And it's kind of like, what about all the other freaking like 100 people that worked on this? You know what I mean?
I
It
agree.
just kind of hurts. Speak from experience too.
I
So I'm like, it
agree.
hurts.
And I think as an actor, seeing like a director who puts the emphasis on naming the extras as a character is it's so important because it reinforces that, hey, if you're not just bringing someone a cup of coffee in the background, like, and it's like it also allows the actor to set themselves up like, okay, I'm going to deliver the most tired coffee in the world, or oh yeah, this is the world's greatest coffee, and that adds something that you might not you might that really adds true artistic value to it that people don't realize that if it wasn't there. So
It
I
just
really
feel like
appreciate that.
blank and hollow. Yeah, of course. No, I appreciate that too. Do you tend to find yourself writing, like, what's the genre of like things you like to write?
Ooh, I write a lot of different stuff. I know Kevin himself focuses in on
Comedic,
comedy. I
right?
do stand-up
So
comedy
you
as
do
well.
stand-up also, not just referring to writing like
I've only been on the
comedy
mic a
scripts.
few times. It's something I'm growing. One I'm going to shout out because I believe in shouting out a rising talent. I want to also emphasize it's a woman because
Hell
I
yeah.
don't think they're getting enough credit in comedy and they're coming out with some of the best
Right.
stuff right now, and that's Rachel Grenillo.
Okay, very cool.
I told her if this movie sells for enough, I'm gonna pay for your special. Like
Oh my
I
God,
like
how excited.
she's that good. I ended up in a Second City stand-up class for, and I studied comedies, and I'm older than her. And I studied it for so I just because I love it. I mean, nothing's more pure than a laugh. One of my favorite actors, outside of Brando, is Robin Williams.
Oh my God, yes.
God rest their souls. But I said when she just stepped up for the first day to do her thing, first day, and I was like, I had to stop. I said, Rachel, you do realize that people spend their whole lives trying to be that good, and you said
Trying to
this.
be this funny,
And
and
you
they're
just did it
not.
on the first swing. I'm like, these are
Wow.
concise deliveries on point. There's some little more polishing to go, but this is good. And just to see that, some that see her that and see that she sees that somebody sees that. And I mean that, like she is a phenomenal talent. So I got into stand-up comedy to make people laugh. And then Kevin wrote this beautiful comedy by the grape of God. It's about two priests, Father Thomas, played by someone who's been in, he's been in quite some of the most historical films in cinema history, and I really can't wait to announce him being a part of this. He's such an incredible actor, and I mentioned Tarantino earlier, so that'll be one clue for everybody if they want to go hunt to find out. He was in one of the Tarantino films. He's a phenomenal actor. He's been in other ones that are of critical acclaim as well too, in that regard. Father Thomas, 60, is tired, jaded, and he has this bright-eyed, freshly minted priest played by yours truly named Christopher.
Love it, love it.
And they embark on a wine drinking escapade in Napa Valley to save their flailing parish. And a whole lot of comedy just in hilarious characters come a part of this and the journey, and they end up in a crisis of identity. Because it's not a faith film. We can't avoid the fact that, it's two priests, so there's that element. But what a bet, like Kevin just found that nuance of what a better, what a amazing catalyst, I should say, to talk about like your identity and where you're at through something that has impacted the world for such a long period of time, whether it was ancient gods to, Christianity. And I mean, for crying out loud, we've had wars to this day over religion, and everything that it's impacted, and finding a way to nuance that to talk about people's identity. And we watch not only the leads but the supporting characters, and essentially this vineyard, going through a crisis of identity. So, he just it's the in my opinion, I like to call it the it's the warm blanket movie. It's the one that you like. Kevin wrote a script that got people to go to cinema, and when you came out, you were smiling, talking with
That's the
people,
best. I love that.
or the or maybe I'm dating myself, on this, but like back when there was just basic cable and you would turn on TNT, even if it's 30 minutes in, you're like, yeah, even though I've seen that, but you want to sit down and have that. And yeah, I think it's such a beautifully well done. And we've been lucky to bring on, as for director, Colmkill Donston, who is
Very cool.
just doing such a phenomenal job. He and has really brought a driving force in helping us, because there's a lot of comparisons we see with Sideways. We see Little Miss Sunshine,
Right, great movies.
Fleabag,
Yes.
and really emphasizing high quality comedy that doesn't talk down, doesn't dumb itself down. Really talks to the fact that, people are smart. Like,
The
let's have
audience is
fun with
smart.
it.
Yeah,
And don't get me
definitely.
wrong, we can fall on a banana peel every now and then. We all need that.
That's so
It's
funny you brought that up, because I posted on my personal page. I saw a banana peel right by my car, and I was like, "Do people actually fucking slip on this? Like, is that a real thing? Like, where did this come from? Like, where did the idea of like slipping on a banana peel come from?"
Well, it is the world's funniest fruit. I
Yeah.
gotta look into that particular history more. I want to know which comedian did that on
Yeah, I was like,
stage.
who slipped on the banana? Like, who was that first person to like actually slip on a banana peel? And I was like, how do you feel about now when you watch movies, like comedy movies, comparing them to like back in the day? Like, I feel like you can't really make half of the jokes that you could back then, just because, I don't know, I feel like now it's like, oh, you can't say this, or you're gonna offend this person, or you're gonna offend that. Or even with like stand-up comedy, like you saw that whole thing when they
Chappelle?
the Chappelle thing. Yes, exactly. And also like just the idea of like, oh, you shouldn't say these things, but it's like a comedy show, so it's like everything kind of goes in a comedy show, and it's like you shouldn't go if you're gonna get your feelings hurt, I guess. But I don't know, like, where is the line? Like, what do you think, like the future will be with comedy scripts?
I disagree with the notion you can't say anything,
Yeah.
minus a certain few words that, American
Right.
society might have made.
Right.
I would say it's more about, I think when comedy offends, it's because you didn't execute. I think
That's a good point. I like that.
right now we're in a place where we're seeing a lot of, as far as movies and television goes, we occasionally see weak National Lampoon stuff versus, like, if you
Right.
want to talk, like, I don't, it's maybe it's comedy dramedy hybrid, but you have like amazing, highly executed shows like
Right.
Succession and Atlanta. I mean,
Yeah,
Atlanta is
yeah.
one of the greatest shows I've ever seen,
Right.
and it's of itself. So shout out to Donald Glover, Zazie Beetz, and
Yeah.
Lakeith Stanfield, who that would be a dream to work with.
Yeah.
Any one of them is just phenomenal, high level acting. Or even then, look at what could have offended from Everything Everywhere All at Once.
True.
Because you're talking about, they went for it. That
Yeah.
is like, you are a kid and you were writing up your dream movie,
Yeah.
which, and you executed that, which means every single actor, every single department had to execute at the highest level. And it has more Oscars than Lord of the Rings and The
Right,
Godfather. So it's just
right.
like, I don't think there's a line in which you could go, but I think people understand there's a certain level of taste you might
Right.
go to, and not everyone
It's like,
has. Sometimes it's also about how you're intending to say it. Like,
that's true.
I think sometimes, especially I see with like quote unquote conservative comedians, I guess, I don't, I'm like, why are you making your comedy politics. Like that's
Yeah.
not what people want to go for.
Right.
But you know, but like things like that where like they're saying things like, dude, you're just bashing women, like this is weird.
Yeah.
Or like sometimes they'll
Right.
start off, and I think sometimes people, especially with stand-up, they won't like the beauty of comedy is the intimacy. Like when you go, like one thing I don't agree with, but more power to these comedians, is like stadium tours. It's like the thing is like the person in the 300 nosebleed seats
Right.
is somewhat being forced to laugh because you're talking about like you want to be part of it versus the
Right.
intimacy of going to like say the House of Blues or
Right.
something
Something
smaller
smaller.
where it's like you're feeling like you can touch this person because
Right.
they're sharing to a large degree some of their most intimate and like darkest humorous thoughts and like saying like, hey, welcome to my messed up mind. And by that proxy, you know, that's where I think sometimes it's lost is comedy's about intimacy. So some comedians will jump into the gross and vulgar before you've really gained that
Right.
rapport with them.
Right.
You know, and I'm sure there's a few famous ones I could talk about, but I don't like talking smack.
No, that's I like your point of view on these things. How do you find inspiration for writing your scripts? Like, are you channeling it from things that have personally happened to you, or like, you know, people you meet, or is it all just made up? Like, what, how does it happen?
My own writing generally just comes. I'm somewhat on the spectrum, so sometimes just I might see something and my friends or my partner will look at me and they'll be like, and all of a sudden I'll be like this, and they're like, "You have something, don't you?" I'm like, "Yes," and I just pretty much write when I have the juice. So like sometimes I can get 20 pages out in, you know, 10, 20 minutes.
Nice. Love that. I'm like,
But I then I
shit.
procrastinate the rest of the time because it's just like it's just when I have the juice, and then I try to stay with it as long as I can, because once I don't have it, that juice and that energy, that story is not there. And I think it comes from my acting side where it's like I need that, I need to figure out, otherwise it becomes kind of shoehorn or pandering at points, and I don't, and I want it to just be authentically the juice. And that's how my writing generally comes about. As far as comedy goes, a lot of it just comes from what I see in the media of things, and how I also, you know, our upbringing shape how we view
100%.
things, but also being malleable to how times change, and trying to figure out, you know, like what works, what not. And then obviously, like obviously when I'm on the mic, it's like, oh, well, that didn't work. How do I either change that or do I toss that
I was
completely?
gonna say, like, when you say a joke and you're performing, and like, let's say it doesn't get the reaction that you thought, like it's not as funny maybe, or people don't laugh as much. Do you try with another crowd to like see if it was just that crowd that didn't like get the joke, or is it like, all right, I'm tossing it, like putting a new joke in?
I suppose it might depend on the reaction. I would say, unless I felt it was teetering the offensive line, I would try it again. Or if I felt it was teetering the way, can I rework the wording to, because, you know, you could be saying it and it's not an offensive thing, but how that comes off to somebody and how you deliver that could also be defensive. So is it delivery?
Ah, I see.
Is it how you do things? But and even not offending, like they just might not like it because of the delivery, or you know, it would have hit better if you delivered it in a different manner, or if you used the wrong, if you used there, and you know, it's when you're using all the versions of there, you know, maybe it's one of just those sort of things. But you know, I think it's just, I don't really think you should give up on a joke unless it's offensive.
That's fair.
Or if it's just so, and that's not saying you don't give up on it, but on the initial one is like two or three times. You know, maybe if it's not working in Texas, maybe it works in Portland. You know, like it depends on the vibe and what you're going for, I guess, and how that's playing out, and also how are the other jokes working? How do the other jokes, does it assist in getting your skit through?
Okay, that's I love that. I like that a lot actually. So where did the producing come into all of this? Like, is it 'cause you were writing your own stuff and you're like, "Well, I mean, I know like what kind of budget I'm looking at, like writing the script," or was it
It
how did...
was due to Kevin's script. I and in having that lull, it, you know, I was tired of waiting on the industry to allow me to do something. And it was also just when I read that script, it wasn't just about the fact that there was a character for me. It was, this is a beautiful story, and I want to do stuff that makes people want to go to the theater. And I also want to, like, my whole thing is I want to pour the love in the world that wasn't poured into me as a young man and as a young boy. And this is just such a warm story. And it's something, like I said, even though it's as two priests, it's anybody can go watch this and really relate. You know, you could be an imam, you know, you could be a sheikh, you know, you could be a rabbi, you know, you could be someone who's atheist and never touches religion. You could be the most devout priest in the world and just have a laugh. And I like to think that God has a sense of humor. You know, because otherwise, why is he making us laugh? But it, in the end, and I said, Kevin, we have to do this. And he's like, you really think this could do something? I said, Kevin, this is a festival, darling, waiting to happen. This is the stuff that people are asking to be back in the theaters. It doesn't all have to be about selling a toy, selling everything, but selling celebrities instead of just selling a story. I mean, when Lord of the Rings was first pushed out, I'm sure their marketing team was preparing to sell toys, but they sold you, even the trailers back then, they would sell you a general gist of the story enough to say, do you want to come on this journey with me? And that's what we're going to be doing, is saying,
Love
come on
that.
this journey with us, come have fun for an hour and a half, and just watch this crisis of identity. And right now the world might be going through that, so maybe it's the right time for it, you know.
Have you ever thought about writing a script, you know, about bullying and things that maybe you encountered when you were in high school or in school, you know, just because there's so many, there's a lot of kids that get bullied. Like I actually got bullied too in high school. So when you mentioned, I was like, PTSD. And I've always thought about, like, I don't know, maybe even just like talking about it on the podcast, because mine was more cyberbullying. So everything was like online, and I felt like the whole world could see it. It was like when Twitter and Formspring started like coming out, and Formspring was this like really weird thing where you can like comment on someone's profile anonymously and ask them like questions. And like it turned into such a hateful like platform where people would just like talk shit versus like ask you questions. And I just like remember like hating like school. I didn't want to go to school because I felt like everyone hated me and I didn't know who it was, like who was like asking, like talking shit and like saying these mean things and spreading rumors. Like it was just like a
Well,
nightmare.
I'll help you on that. For some odd reason, even though I was one of the star athletes, everyone hated me in high school and I didn't know anybody. We had moved to the town that I did. And I was, from the initial bullying, was too shy to really get to know anybody. So much so I probably lost out on a few girlfriends from being too shy, you know, and other potential partners. But you know, I'm you know, I got mine now and I'm very happy about it. But you know, and she was a shy kid growing up too, so maybe that's why. And no, it's funny, is she, it's funny because I was so into the emo girls growing up and she was an emo girl. But the thing was, I would have never approached him because I was like,
Right.
I would
If you
get
met earlier, you
ridiculed.
would have been like,
I would have just been, I felt I would have been ridiculed. And so like, it was just like, if I grew up with you, she was like, oh, do you think we would have been together? I'm like, no, I would have been too scared to deal with it more. And that's the thing is, you know, is the funny thing is, I always do the things I'm scared of. So maybe I would have.
maybe.
But you know, I met her when I met her.
You
And
met her at the right time.
you
You met her at
know,
the right time.
I definitely did. You know, surprisingly shortly after being homeless. And it was just like, I just got an apartment, you know, sort of thing. And you know, I ended up laying all my cards out on the table and being like, I just went through all of this. And she was like, oh, I'm still interested. And I was just like, because I didn't think she would. She looks like a million bucks. She's not, and
But
she's not
she's
a,
not shallow, like
no.
judging you from your past, you know? And like that's just because you were homeless at some point, that doesn't make you any less of a person, or like doesn't mean that you can't like be making more money than ever, making more money than like people she know. You know what I mean? It's
I
like you
was making
never
more money
know.
than her at the time.
Right. It's like you never know. And like that's what's also scary with like being in this industry, because like some days you, or some months you are working and making all this money and things are like on the right track. And then sometimes like you're eating air and it's like, what the fuck? Like, what do I do? So, you know, when you were saying all these things, I'm like, yeah, like I feel like a lot of artists struggle with this. It's like, especially like if you're more independent or freelancing and not like part of a union, like it's like scary because you
Well,
never know.
I do, what I do know is, as far as like a type goes, the only thing that really has ever flowed for me is independent women. I, for me, it's just a matter of so many people in my life do count on me to be this strength. And for me, I need a partner who can handle things on their own, that should things ever collapse, that I know they'll be okay. Like if we're not together, they're fine. And that's something I also take into conscience when I was dating, was like, if I felt that, I said, look, you're not in the right space. I'm not healthy enough to be with you when you're not healthy enough to be with someone. I want you to come into this healthily, because to some degree, and I don't like, it's the Catholic guilt that I grew up with, is, you know, when I give myself this nod, it feels kind of thing is I do my best. Like I love love. I love pouring myself into that.
Yeah.
I've done better at now pouring it into me as well, but, you know, is, and sometimes I do feel, because I do think women are often at times when it comes to certain things treated not ideal, and, and they find someone who's treating them well, and then they grab onto that, because it's like, I mean, I'm sure you had it where it's like, you know, dirtbag boyfriend, dirtbag boyfriend, this guy, right? And he's so sweet. And, you know, as you know, I, at 25, all of a sudden I started being called attractive, and I was like, what? and now it's a sweet guy who they've deemed attractive. And I'm like, the best thing I can do for you is not allow you to put yourself in a situation that, even if I do things the right way and we were to split, that you are broken, because then it's like the good guy, you couldn't even have that. And it's like, I want to make sure that you're healed, because otherwise I'm doing them and myself and us potentially as a couple of disservice. But I got to run into this amazing woman who, you know, just like I said, she's an angel on earth. If anybody were to ever have a problem with them, her, regardless, if we were
the issue,
I've always told her, if we were to split up in a toxic divorce, if anybody say anything bad about you, I would lose it on them. I just think when you know some, like, there's times I myself feel inferior, because, you know, all the goodness she has, when I find myself not being as good as her, as a person as her, I'm like, this is who I'm with. And like, it's like, it's sometimes at times I put it on a pedestal. But you know, I'm very lucky to have her in my life. So yeah.
Earlier you mentioned that you also worked for Hulu. I was just a little curious about that. Like, how did that happen? When was that? And are you still doing that, or?
That was a couple years ago. I left it a couple years ago to pursue acting full time. I was doing advertising, so I was Big Brother. I got
You were doing the advertising for Big Brother?
No, essentially, I have your cookies, and I when you think you didn't talk about Tide Pods, I'm the one who
got it.
Yeah. So yeah, I did that for a while. It's a really great company, and I really enjoyed it, and I made some of the best friends that I did in the advertising industry in there, and I love them to death, and I hope with everything that's coming down with all these companies cutting down, I hope they get to keep their jobs. I hope they also get some increased pay. And, you know, I really want that for them, because, you know, Hulu kicked ass during the pandemic. So I really hope Disney rewards them for that, because, you know, and, you know, they're a staple. And in my opinion, one of the reasons I love going to Hulu is, in my opinion, it was the millennials streaming service.
Totally.
I do have some disagreements with the way it's been handled since its since ownership has been acquired from it. Yeah. And you know, I think that's the one thing that in its way disappointed me, because I mean, there were so many great shows like High Fidelity with Zoe Kravitz. That was perfect. And I never seen an Office get so mad when that was canceled, or you know, I even, when I was watching the advertising for Reboot, I was like, oh, this seems very kiddified. But then I, you know, we put it on.
Yeah.
I'm like, why is this canceled? This is high level. Right. And you know, Keegan-Michael Key, you know, he's doing so many amazing things. Like Netflix had Friends from College, which was phenomenal.
Right.
And they just didn't really promote it. Right. And it was just like, you're producing high level stuff that that could be of acclaim, and then you cancel it. And I know they all have their metrics. And I think, much like with like baseball and other sports, sometimes people get too metric centric. Yeah. Where it's like, oh, if it's not bringing it, like now it's the $1 billion movie wars. And it's just like, I don't care that it made $1 billion. Like, that doesn't mean it's good. Like, it's like, you know, McDonald's sells 1 billion cheeseburgers every day. That doesn't mean they're all good. You know?
I've and definitely had some.
No offense, McDonald's. I still have a burger on occasionally.
Exactly.
But yeah, I think, you know, sometimes just standing with your quality, like a craftsman tool that you got from your grandpa and things like that. And I you know, I really want to see us rebuild the quality of our stuff so that it lasts. It's good for so many different things, whether it's, you know, the economy, the environment, and all these things, to build things that could last. And, you know, nothing lasts forever, but something that does stand some time.
Right. And what, like, exact, like, responsibilities were you doing for advertising? Like, obviously, you're advertising things, but, like, what exactly, like, did a day look like?
A lot of times it would be talking with clients, letting them know how you're going to maximize, you know, their ads, and, like, you know, letting them know, understand. Unfortunately, you know, due to the way I see things through the world on my sort of end of the spectrum, yeah. is it allows me to kind of see things in a way that analysts can't. So not only do I pair the numbers with that, but I pair my creative mind. So, like, I had someone who was trying to advertise the Tolkien movie a few years ago.
Okay.
And, you know, they were trying to say, like, oh, yeah, we should target Lord of the Rings and Harry Potter. And that hadn't been out for, like, 12 years, either
right.
one of them.
Right.
And I had to say, like, look, this is not a large platform. This was at a different company. And this is not a large platform. Maybe we should consider Fantastic Beasts and Game of Thrones, because Game of Thrones was inspired by Tolkien. And, you know, obviously Fantastic Beasts is part of the Harry Potter world. And they're like telling me, like, no, we've done the numbers. I was like, and I said, look, this hasn't come out for 12 years.
Right.
And he's like, and they pushed back. And I said, all right, I'll make you a deal. When it doesn't push out one ad in the first 3 days, can I do what I want? And they said, yes. 2 days go by, like, they panic. And I said, okay, can I do what I said? They're like, yes, yeah. yes. And of course it gets all the ads out that they need. So for a lot of times it's just, you know, sometimes the bigger companies think they know everything. I actually really love working with local and small to medium sized businesses mm-hmm. when I was doing it, because for, like, Apple, it's no thing for them to blow $1 million. $2,000 that they're spending, it all matters to them. Like, there's certain deals that their shop's putting up to try to drive people in. And, like, if it's like a, like, I'll shout out a local cookie store, Cookie Good. I'm going to try to do that, you know, you know, Cookie Good. And it's like, if they put out an ad, like, oh, we're selling the 4th of July cookie at this time, and people haven't had it before, and they come in to try it. Right. Now they're like, oh, the cookie's so good.
Right.
I got to come back again.
Yeah.
And for me, that matters more versus, like I said, the franchises of the world, you know, where it's just, like I said, Well, we're just not happy we lost $1 billion. I'm like, well, you didn't do anything to manage it. And it's just like, and you didn't listen to our advice, and you said you were an expert. Whereas,
you said you were an expert, yeah.
Yeah, and it's just like, but, you know, I'm telling you, I'm seeing the numbers because I have to look at them all day. But sure, you know, but yeah, you know, and that's pretty much what I did. And then I would just support, you know, helping junior employees get an understanding of it. Because when I joined Hulu, I had worked at all the biggest companies and some of the best boutiques in the world. And I joined Hulu because it was the millennial company, because the culture there was so phenomenal. Don't get me wrong, I wanted a little bit more pay, but that's what I came there for, was culture. And you know, and so I had that grounding that a lot of people, because Hulu does a great job of, you know, growing within. And so for me, I wanted to make sure that they understood the outsider's perspective so that they could empower themselves when opportunities might not be present in the time that they want or need them to make choices, whether they want to stay or pivot and things like that. And I was also part of the diversity and inclusion committees.
Oh, I love that.
I think they wanted a disabled veteran on there, and having those opportunities. I've been very fortunate. Like I said, I think, you know, as an actor, you know, having the respect of the industry that I've been slowly but surely getting, not that I'm seeking it, but I feel very lucky that my work's starting to show for itself. And then, you know, taking down this journey of by the grape of God, I couldn't be more happy, you know, getting the fiscal sponsorship, getting the high slated score that we did.
I know, that's amazing.
It's just industry validation that the industry is behind us.
Right.
And then, of course, we brought in industry talent. We just brought on Betsy
Zuck. Oh, yeah. See it.
Just brought on Betsy Zuck is our production designer. Mm-hmm. She's worked on films such as, like, The Accursed and other ones such as, like, Rogue Hostage with John Malkovich and things like that. And, you know, she's, what a professional she is. And, you know, I don't know what it is that's allowing me to get these high talents, because there's also our DP, William Rowley.
It's good work. It's script work.
I think it's great script work, but I also think it's what we're trying to do as a team, because we're asking people to take a hit. This is a SAG New Media ultra low budget.
Yeah.
And that's the thing is, what, like, and this isn't some sort of...
What does that exactly mean? Everybody would know that.
There's a certain level of cap, and like, basically, we're only doing this much because we're trying to do it to festivals and streaming. Mm-hmm. So this way we can keep it at a certain healthy rate, because, you know, in the end, we're putting in our life savings. We're bringing on investors soon. We're in a lot of those conversations, fortunately. So, you know, we're asking someone like Betsy, who is just what a professional. She's such a talent. And then you're talking about our DP, William Rowley, who's worked hand in hand with Colm, because Colm's been tearing up the East Coast film festivals with his a few of his shorts,
Amazing.
Range anywhere from 10 to 40 minutes, just
Yeah.
based on, like I said, the one thing I promised
Yeah.
Kevin, our writer, was it's about your vision.
Right.
And that's the thing is, and like he gives me, and I say at max, because I'm only allowing myself 5% creative control other than my acting, of course. But and it's just, I always told Kevin, it's about your vision. That's what matters to me. The last thing I want is something to go on screen and you're like, what happened to my story?
Right.
And then have your name attached to that.
Yeah.
And because I'm like, Kevin, this script is
Together.
beautiful. Now pairing it with such a high level professional like Betsy,
Yeah.
and now we're in the process of talking with hair and makeup artists and our costume designers.
Yeah. The
And
ball's moving. It's coming along.
it really is. And bringing in these high class professionals
Yeah.
who are not only very talented, but the one thing we wanted was really good people, because
Right. A good set is important. It's a good foundation to a good movie. You can't have like people that don't work well together, or there's like tension, or just like are not on the same page, or even not good at planning stuff. Like you want all those like key factors.
I'm going out to all the networking things, trying to meet people, because I don't really have like an in, like, I'm not someone who was born into Hollywood. I'm
Yeah,
not,
I get
I
it.
didn't grow up acting.
Yeah.
And that was the thing, was is also checking myself, is it can't be all my friends, because it's
No.
just like you have to have people that understand the professional line. And not that my friends
Right.
wouldn't, but that also doesn't include our sound guy, who is my oldest friend in the
Yeah,
world,
yeah, yeah.
and I would like to shout him out. His name is Mohammed Sultan. He's a world-class director. I really hope people start looking at his work as well.
Yeah.
He's phenomenal. He does everything in Hollywood. He's a DP.
Nice.
He's a sound. He's one of the best sound guys, one of the best gaffers in the
Wow.
industry, and he's been doing it for 10 years. He's all of these things for 10 years. But such a phenomenal director and writer. He does international commercials and has been so close on some of his shorts and series
Wow.
with getting bought.
Yeah.
And I really hope someone picks him up, because he just. He's got such experience.
Back.
He is my oldest friend, 14 years,
Wow.
and he's also my oldest by age friend.
Yeah.
Though he's totally young, and he's also the kind of guy who also reminds me to at sometimes to not give a fuck and just enjoy myself. I
Oh.
have a team of, and we're also trying to vary things and make this a very inclusive space.
Yeah. No, but you have your tribe, like your team that you work really well with, and like that you don't feel comfortable and like know that they're gonna like deliver what they're saying. And I feel like that is great, 'cause like not everyone has like their little circle that they're like, yeah, like we all work really well together. Like sometimes it's like, oh, I know like one person or one here, like one, but a whole
Well, we're still
team.
figuring out if William and Betsy will work with us, but yeah, we don't doubt that. They're just
Right.
so solid.
Yeah.
But we just actually brought them on, and
Woo,
they are
nice.
moving. And
Yeah.
like that's what we got from William and Connor, and that's what we're getting from them. And I
Right.
mean, what I'm hoping is by the end of this, we make something so good that whether it's we get enough to say, hey guys, you want to do this again,
Yeah.
or that at least other people are giving them the opportunities, because they're high caliber talents all
Yeah.
around.
Yeah.
And that's just so important too. That's obviously, it's important to the film, but then who they are, it's just like, the one thing I'm very fortunate that people have told me, like, I make a safe place to work.
Yeah,
So
that's
for
huge.
me, it's just like, that was important to make sure, I ensure that, especially as the spear, at the tip of the spear of this. And I will, and having the bedrock of our writer and our other co-producer and on this, who have really been the staples and the foundation, when, because I'm an actor, I'm emotional. They gotta kind of keep the, sometimes the spear goes wonky, like, nope, straighten you out. And it's also having the humility to take a step back
Right.
and do that. And we're having a place where people can communicate, elaborate. And I've always told them, like,
Right.
hey guys, don't ever forget how far an apology can really go, especially in
Yeah.
today when people just want to triple down on things. Because if you
Yes.
mean an apology and you really want to do right, that's what matters. And we have a bunch of really good people. And I think it's a combination of having an excellent script, having some high class acting talent that we're bringing on. Those announcements are going to be coming up soon. And then having just people are going to treat you right. Allowing people who I'm probably not paying enough, and it hurts me deep down inside knowing I've been underpaid as long as I have in the
Yeah.
advertising industry and
Yeah.
other jobs. But knowing they're like, Sean says he's got us and they believe in that.
Yeah.
And that means the world to me,
right.
You know, and let's just say we make, I don't think this is happening, $100 million.
Yeah.
The team understands and the people coming out understand, we're not going to sit on a mound of gold when you guys took a cut or,
right.
Or if we're able to get back to the rates prior to that is, you know, like we're still going to hook you up because we're willing to take the cut to make, mm-hmm. you know, our writers beautiful vision and dream come to life.
Right.
Like that means everything to us.
Yeah.
And I know like we live in this way where people say altruistic things and don't follow through, but I do everything I'm going to say I'm going to do. And, you know, and I'm a man of my word. And I live and die by that.
Yeah.
The worst thing that in the world that ever hits me is when I have no choice but to walk it back. Mm-hmm. And I'm not talking about like, oh, I had a fact wrong about something I'm saying and like, oh, I'm being corrected. Mm-hmm. It's something happened. I have to say, I can't live up to that. That kills me inside. And I think these people are seeing that and they're gravitating towards that. And they see that the team is behind that spear and that's where we're moving. I think that's why we're doing it because we have something special and we know we're going to do something special with it.
And
we're getting the right teams involved. So yeah, if we have to push even farther, if the strike goes on and we hope that, it works out, that everyone can just be, find something that makes everyone happy,
right.
and move forward, so that, you know, we can do this because it's, you know, we're not a studio, you know, it's already so hard on the independent films trying to have a come up. And, you know, especially when it's guys like ourselves, and I say guys as general people, putting in our money and the efforts, you know, we've been working on this since last year in February. If we have to push it to next year, which would be the absolute emergency route,
right.
We're ready for that. And because we have the team that understands like, okay, we'll go get our other jobs. We'll wait for you. We'll make sure once you find that out, we'll keep that slot.
Right.
So we're having the right team. And in the end, that's just time. Fine. We'll bolster more funds. We'll find other ways to make sure that we can help ensure the quality of the film. And everybody's in lockstep with that. So it's
going to happen for sure.
We're
with
not
your positivity and your mindset and your discipline. It's going to happen for sure. And it seems like you have a really great team behind you. So I think it's going to be awesome.
I'm surrounded by my betters and that's what gives me the confidence. And I think that's really the key. I feel like every crappy CEO who just barks orders.
Yeah.
And I don't think I bark them. I just say, hey, can we get this done?
Yeah.
And they all go do it. And maybe I'm diminishing what I do because I do a bit, but you know, a lot of it's just getting the right people. And I think that's really a lot of the special sauces. We got the right people. We're getting the right people. We're making this an inclusive environment, both sides of the camera. That's so critically important to me because, you know, women, particularly women of color, LGBTQ+, when people who looked like me were not picking me up in the world, they were the ones who befriended me. They were the ones who said, no, you belong here. You deserve things.
Yeah.
And, you know, I couldn't do anything but do my best to do right by them. And that's what we're trying to do here. And, you know, really try to make, you know, the world and the industry a little bit better of a place.
Yeah, I'm all for that. Like, amen to that.
I think one thing I deprived myself, and I think some of that comes from having been brought up Catholic, was a lot of self-flagellation and punishing yourself and understanding that you don't have to go too far and also and beating yourself up.
Yeah.
You know, you screw up, do right by your wrong to the point where you know, like, hey, you did your right. And sometimes I would even put like, sometimes there will be, what would society think? Do I do need to do more or whatever?
Right.
Or if, you know, or you're not fitting in. And I think when it comes to not fitting in itself, it's if you invest in yourself and you understand and you start loving yourself, and that's such a hard thing to do because the world is telling you what, and unfortunately, technically I've been a part of that with advertising is, it's everyone's telling you you're not good enough, that you need to have more eyeliner or you know, you need to be taller or whatever it is, and or you know, you need to have more muscles, you know, and all that jazz. It's if you love yourself, I think, and you learn to find ways to love yourself and find your peace within yourself, all the rest of the chips will fall into place. And that's really where I think most of my juice is. Just I have this weird belief in people, and even as much as they've let me down, if I give up on that, I don't know where I'd be at this point in my life, because it's all I have is that weird Mr. Rogers, look for the helpers belief.
So very inspired.
It's definitely been about people. You know, if I didn't have Sam Miller as an absolute mentor in my life, who officially put me on this as a professional path, or my acting coach, John Marklin, from the Marklin Studio. If you watch The Bear, Jeremy Allen White coach. Who John actually started my healing from the trauma. You know, I would say Sam cracked the ice and has been a big brother to me. And then being in John's school, being around him, being around my tribe, I call that place my tribe, has been exponential. It's gotten me back to my roots in acting, which is what has gotten me the quote unquote, the respect from my peers who've been doing this from anywhere from 1 year to 30 and saying, like, you know, when people were coming in and auditioning, is this the guy playing Christopher? Cause I'm just reading other characters' lines and they're like, yes, like that's the guy. And, you know, saying that, having that respect from them, I couldn't have had that where I was blocked prior to meeting, Sam and John, and Sam being with Green Shoes and then John obviously being with his own studio, and I have to say Max Barnes hunted me down for 2 years before actor was even in my profile. And I guess someone must have told him through the grapevine, and he kept pestering me for months, come to the studio.
Hey, there you go.
And there was just a class that resonated with my soul so much that right as I was leaving, I said, I'm coming for that one at this time. And I let him know, and it changed my life. It started that healing, and it started the true version of self-love that I needed, because it's okay to love everybody, but you still got to pour into your own cup.
I love that's a fantastic way to end the podcast. Very, very inspiring, very hopeful. And I love it. Love yourself, because at the end of the day, you have to love yourself before you can give that love to anybody else.
I appreciate you inviting me on. It means the world for us, our movie. Yeah. By the grape, I'm just so excited for By the Grape of God.
Yeah, throw out some shout outs. Like, where can we follow the film? Because I know you've been posting about it.
So the film page is By the Grape of God.
Yes.
So at By the Grape of God. We're soon to launch a website as well.
Okay.
In addition, you can follow me at Zat Sean, ZatSean. It'll give you a little information about the Instagram on By the Grape of God. We're slowly updating that. Obviously, we have a few announcements coming out. And obviously, please check out Muhammad Sultan. He is just such a phenomenal talent. And, for anybody who does love veterans, he's one hell of a veteran, one of the most upstanding individuals in the world with a high level of talent. Hear more about this as we make announcements.
Exactly.
I think By the Grape of God is the movie, and we look forward to presenting it to you guys in the future. And feel free to reach out if you want to talk about donating to the film or anything like that. Our GoFundMe is currently down, but we can get stuff talking. And if you guys want to help bolster that fund so that we can bring Kevin's dream to life, because it's a special film and a special script, and we're going to make it very special for you guys. And I want to give you guys a reason just to take a break from all the toy movies and everything else. And, maybe just have something fun and, enjoy.
So we'll see you guys next week. Bye.